Kevin, I really miss the old style MTV that just played music videos.
Oh man, really old style.
Yeah, like old school with just really low quality everything. Sound, visuals, commercials, pandering to the lowest common denominator. I really miss it. And there's just something charming about it, I guess. And forgive me for waxing nostalgic, but I was on YouTube the other day, and I don't use the internet very often, so I typed in my favorite subject, dinosaurs, and the first thing that came up, lo and behold, was a Dinosaur Jr. music video.
Was it the... I know where you're going with this.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and take it, Kevin.
All right, well, there's this Dinosaur Jr. music video. It's directed by Spike Jones. That was made in the early 90s. I can't remember the name of the song.
Nor can I. It's not really important. The song's actually not very good.
No, not a very good song. Not very memorable. But in the music video, it's Dinosaur Jr. and his friend, his partner.
Dinosaur Sr., I suppose.
And they're playing a leisurely game of golf throughout the city of New York, where they're hitting it off of buildings and hitting it over to Roosevelt Island and then hitting it to the top of the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an elaborate game. It's an entertaining music video.
And I was really drawn to this because it was just fun to watch people play golf in such an exotic environment. Usually it's on placid courses with grass and greens and the occasional sand trap and the occasional water hazard. Mm-hmm. But it's
maybe
always
a hill here and there.
It's sedate. You can walk around right there. You'd want to have a picnic there.
Sure.
Not, I mean, so on the top of the Empire State Building.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But this music video, while it was somewhat entertaining, was very simple.
Yeah.
Much like golf.
Golf is actually a very simple game.
On the surface.
But
it actually runs pretty deep. And that's what we're here to discuss today, is the game of golf. So, I guess we should begin at the beginning.
Yeah, we can talk about the origins of golf itself, which I believe dates back to ancient Egypt.
Actually, it does. There's first signs of any form of golf are actually scrolled on the pyramids of Egypt, mm-hmm. where they have hieroglyphs of figures hitting small balls with crooked
reed
sticks.
Yeah.
Which archaeologists believe to be a sign of an early golf. However, we do not know the rules or anything really regarding that early golf, other than they played a game similar to it.
Yeah, the rules... Rules aren't very important in golf, is something that I've learned. Of course, you don't really see golf until the 10th, 9th century in Scotland, I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't really see golf come up again in civilization, in history, until thereabouts, and you see it being more codified with the recognizable symbols that we see today. Clubs, tartan colors.
Flags.
Placid landscapes, you know, as you'd see in the hills of Scotland.
And Scotland actually famously made the first golf doctrine to actually write down the first set of rules, which now govern the sport as we know it today.
However, I don't want you to think that these are hard and fast rules. It's more of a game of tradition. If you look at something like baseball, you see all the players wearing these uniforms, these high, tight socks and these short sleeves and short pants, and they don't have to wear those, but they just do. It's tradition. Everyone expects you to wear it in the same way that that golf expects you to do certain things.
Right. Think about it as a colloquial sport. There's mm-hmm. the three guidelines, the rules that must be followed, but everything else is a guideline that kind of comes out of the culture that you grow up around. Sort of similar to language, actually.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you grow up in Scotland, you're going to speak English with a Scottish dialect. Mm-hmm. Or if you grow up in Germany, you're going to speak German until you're taught English in high school. Like with golf, you know, if you're growing up in Scotland, you're going to learn a slightly different game of golf than if you grew up in, let's say, Missouri.
And there's the three big rules that we keep harping on. They're this. Essentially, one, no picking up the ball and putting it somewhere else. I think that's one we can all agree on. That's definitely 100% cheating. You just can't do that.
Right.
It's not the spirit of the game.
It's breaking rule one.
It's getting it in a good whack. Rule number two, no talking. Golf is a game of silence. It is unlike most sports, which seem to, where the athletes seem to thrive on the cacophony of thousands of shrieking fans. Golf seems to demand silence. Some of history's greatest golfers, not ones we've seen these days, but in the past, in the 18th and 17th century, were, according to legend, totally deaf, and I can see this being a huge advantage in a game of skill and concentration
and
like golf.
And massive tension.
Golf is really tense. It is actually a very, very dangerous and uncomfortable sport to play, but we'll get into that at a later point in time. We have to get now to the third rule, which I think might actually be one of the most important ones, and that is chiefly no women. Women are not allowed on or around a golf course, and even today, it is frowned upon for women to watch or discuss golf on television.
That's in the real professional circuits of golf. There are modified forms of golf nowadays which allow for women to take part, or not so much to take part, but to witness.
That's lady golf, and that's a very different game.
Right.
A lot of rules.
A staggering amount of rules. So many rules that really, if we wanted to get into it, it would take an entire podcast just to discuss the rules of lady golf.
There's the club formatting. You have to have it of a certain length, but you can't have it be too balanced towards one end.
There's a very strict dress code.
You can't wear brightly colored socks. Those are apparently very distracting to all the ducks that have to be on the field.
The game can only be played between the hours of 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. See, there's so many rules that we're getting off topic just talking about.
I have
about
a big,
it.
Huge book of them. And I'll be honest with you, I don't feel like narrating.
We've actually talked, we're not here to discuss lady golf, we're here to discuss golf.
Golf.
So we're going to go ahead and jump back off of this tangent.
I think
we should take a break for a word from our sponsors.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hi, my name is Gary. About 50 years back, my pop struck oil in our backyard while plowing for corn. Ever since then, our family's been refining and selling that gas to our neighbors. And to you, friend. Gary's gas is hand-drilled, fresh every morning, and painstakingly poured into old-fashioned oak barrels. Sure, we don't have fancy pumping systems, but my son Chad, my wife Dolly, and our Irish setter Coco are always here to funnel our homemade gas into your fine automobile. Drink up, son. That's the soul of the heartland. Gary's Gas, located just past exit 34, 1 mile from Mike's Mini Mall on Ridge Avenue. And we are back.
And now getting back on topic of the origins of golf, I wanted to discuss the Scottish were writing their golf doctrine, which I just looked up. Was actually in the 15th century, not the 11th. The 11th century is actually when scientists, archaeologists have found very old golf balls made of stone and bone that are a little bit smaller than today's. But
still have dimples on them.
Right, to reduce drag. So they're very, like, exact same make, but 15th century, or the 1500s, I'm sorry, the Scottish made their golf doctrine stating the rules of golf as we know them. At the exact same time, however, over in America, pre-American America, Central America specifically, the Aztecs were playing a very, very,
very
similar game.
Similar game, not necessarily golf, but it seems to me that much like how every culture just on its own has its own bread, has its own alcohol.
Language.
Language. When not being really connected to each other in any formal or technical way, it's still part of humanity to have these things to them. Bread, wine, and of course, sport. And one of the sports that just seems to appear in totally disparate cultures is a form of golf.
Right. And the Aztecs' form of golf, they would use their religious pyramids, which you've seen before.
These glorious ziggurats.
Right, which they would have their sacrifices on top of on days off, usually actually on days after sacrifices when they had a lot of extra human testicles left. They would use those testicles as golf balls, designate a spot in the city to have a sort of race to see who could get to the first with the ball, and then they would tee off from the pyramid and, you know, land it in the river or in a specific hut. It can be anywhere. And then the person who got there in the least amount of strokes got the reward of either being next sacrifice
or getting to choose the next sacrifice.
Right, yeah, or passing it off to a friend, which was nice, I thought.
Yeah, it's really heartfelt. It might sound brutal to you, but the Aztecs really loved to be sacrificed. It was important to them. If you listen to our Blasphemy podcast, you'd know that.
It was an honor. One of the things, though, that really has come into the fold in the last century in golf and has really raised has been made more and more important.
Is caddies. The use of caddies
is crucial in today's sport. We mentioned that golf was a very
dangerous game.
It's lawless, really.
Yeah, the golf, I don't know if you realize this, you might not have been paying attention to that fact, you don't actually even need to use a club. There are many famous golfers who've used a variety of instruments to perform their task. Adam Sandler, in the famous film Happy Gilmore, famously used a hockey stick that I think was gold. Kevin Costner in Tin Cup used any number of gardening implements to achieve his gold, and Pat the Slapper Jackson just whacked the old thing with his hand.
He had very large hands.
Well, large and powerful, like rocks those things were.
Well, they were all calloused up after years and years of golfing.
Slapping golf balls, right. Yeah.
Since this is since there are no rules, it's very possible at any time during the game
for anything to happen.
Yeah, you know, you might be taking your tee shot on the fourth hole and the other player, the person you're golfing against, might run up and give you a sand wedge to the head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's completely within the rule. You know?
That's totally fine. It's nowhere in the codex of golf does it say that violence is disbarred. And thus, in early golf, in the 17th and 16th centuries, when caddies hadn't come into use, golf was an extremely dangerous game.
Often led to duels.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone is challenged to a duel, there needs to be a second party there for each side, sort of as a witness, and also just to make sure that there's any fair play.
Mm-hmm.
So, because golf so often led to duels, people would commonly be like, oh, I'm going to play golf. I'm probably going to
bring my friend Reginald.
Yeah, because I'm probably going to get into a duel. Mm-hmm. And since you're here, why don't you carry my clubs? And that's literally how caddies got started.
Mm-hmm. Just having a friend to back you up to make you feel safe.
Right. Now, Taylor, let me ask you, if you were in this situation, you know, you and I were going to play a game of golf, and there's a good possibility that it might get heated and I might want satisfaction from you and to kill you or something.
Of course.
And you were like, well, I better prepare for that. I'm going to bring a friend. What type of friend would you want to bring?
I would bring the most brutish, dangerous, skullduggery type friend that I could find.
Right. You might find, in those days, you might find a pirate.
Mm-hmm.
And
these days I'd go to find an ex-con or something like that.
And that's exactly what people did, and that's exactly what people do now. Mm-hmm. Caddies nowadays, their specific skill set
is subtle violence.
And intimidation. Mm-hmm. Violence and intimidation. Now, you may say to yourself, well, I've watched a lot of golf, I've watched the Masters and things like that, and I've never seen an incident.
Mm-hmm. How do you think they get a TV PG rating? They cut that stuff out.
Well, they cut some of it out. Mm-hmm. But really, it's just a testament to the caliber of the players as well as
the caddies.
Just to mention a few caddies, if I may.
Go for it.
There's the famous Jack Nicklaus's caddy, Frank the Tank McKinley, was a high-ranking official in the IRA. Mm-hmm. He was a bare-knuckle boxing champion, a gun runner, and an accomplished fencer before he moved on to caddying.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold Palmer's caddy, Jack Thompson, handcrafted all of his clubs with his metalsmithing skills, which he also used to make the infamous blades, which he wielded with stark precision. He also fashioned all of Palmer's clubs so that they had like a piercing end under the grip.
Little stilettos.
Right.
Just for emergencies.
Yeah, and then there's also Tiger Woods' caddy, his current caddy, Vince the Intense Rutan. I think, you with an umlaut. He's an expert bomb maker who supposedly blinks only twice a day.
Uh-huh.
See, without these caddies, the golfers would be nothing.
Must be a heavy blink. Boom.
It's so loud, it's a distraction on the golf course. These golfers and these caddies are such high caliber, the golfers are aware that at any moment
they could be killed.
They could be sniped, decapitated, run over.
Stabbed.
Shot. Whatever, but they keep their cool, and they keep their focus, and they get the ball in the cup.
And that is why professional golfers are so widely respected, because they play such a dangerous game and have such a relaxed demeanor.
Yeah, and the caddies, too, being able to, like, threaten with very little, to be able to threaten...
With a mere eyebrow raise.
And to intimidate someone's life with a crowd around that is completely oblivious to it. Think about that.
Yeah.
In 1968, there's a famous incident at the PGA Masters tournament with Victor Mullins' caddy narrowly saved Mullins' life. Mario Greenwich, who they were playing against each other.
This is the stuff of action movies.
Greenwich's caddy attempted to run over Mullin with a car on the sixth hole.
Not a cart, a car.
Yeah, it was a... It was a Mustang. It was a Ford Mustang. Yeah. And Mullins' caddy, like, ran and pushed him out of the way in the nick of time, but he was struck by the car, broke his leg in three places. Mullins' caddy, John the Bomb Jackson, miraculously, while getting hit by the car, managed to unpin a grenade and throw it through the back seat window. The car drove off a safe distance, blew up Greenwich's caddy instantly. Greenwich, like a coward, instantly forfeited, or as they call it in golf, surrendered, mm-hmm. before Mullen or Jackson could take advantage of his caddyless vulnerability.
Yeah, probably a smart move.
Yeah, you can, and you can find videos of that on YouTube.
You know, we can go on and on and on about caddies, but I think we need to take another moment for a word from a different sponsor. Bored?
Oh, yeah.
Me too.
Hey! We should read a book.
Yeah, but what?
How about some Sherlock Holmes?
Too confusing.
How about some Shakespeare?
Too confusing.
How about something scary?
Sounds too scary.
I've got it. To Kill a Mockingbird.
You mean Harper Lee's 1960 Pulitzer Prize-winning classic, Modern American Literature?
I do mean that.
I haven't read that since high school, but I remember loving it.
It always makes me think of a simpler time. Not just in America, but in my life.
It makes me think of my mom and dad. Growing up in the 60s, in the South.
A more innocent time, an age of purity.
A time when racism ran through the bloodstream of this country, and the children of that time.
The pure, innocent children.
And the power to correct our mistakes.
To find the collective power within.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this book. I love what it taught me.
I also love To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee.
Available wherever books are sold. I think we've had a lot of discussion about professional golf, but there are, as we stated, many cultures have different types of golf. Yes. But even our Americanized golf has many different sub forms of golf in it. Mm-hmm. There's the most obvious one, which is of course mini golf. Mini golf is a great deal of fun, widely beloved by all. Any town has a putt-putt course in
it's
it.
It's a birthday party. Gold mine extravaganza.
Yeah, and they would be often cultural centers for people to hang out and have cheap pizza, play arcade games, mm-hmm. just have a good time in general. Not
soda pop, possibly bumper boats.
Mm-hmm. You'd get tickets and tokens. It was a good time, mm-hmm. basically, is what I'm saying. And I think that is just it's a way of taking something dangerous and frightening and turning it into something fun, similar to how laser tag turns the brutality of combat into a fun, fun form of shooting your friends.
An educational form of nonviolent war.
Yeah, really. And mini golf is much the same way. Now, mini golf is primarily known, I would say, in popular culture for its elaborate and very silly setups. We have the classic windmill. Let me take it back a second.
Take it back.
Regular golf is challenging primarily because of things such as distance and wind resistance and the danger of your opponent trying to murder you.
Right. Or at least incapacitate you.
Yeah.
Possibly permanently.
Miniature golf attempts to challenge you by making it literally physically hard to put the ball into the hole.
Mm-hmm. Often putting obstacles such as the windmills.
Mm-hmm. There's the classic windmill in which you, as a sporting Don Quixote, wave your club or weapon of choice really futilely at the merciless fan blades. But you can't wave it too much because each wave counts as a stroke, so you could lose pretty easily. Right. There's also the
sometimes there's the reverse octopus where you have to hit the ball into one of many holes and just kind of pray that it comes out of another hole and goes into the cup.
Mm-hmm. It's that one's really more luck than anything else, but it's a good time. It's the end of the game.
Yeah,
it's
sometimes rodents will get stuck in there nesting and and it's not pretty.
Actually, in 1993, in a Chippewa putt-putt, Chippewa County, Virginia, there were a number of pulverized mouse skeletons found in the lodged in the capture basket of one of these things, and they were subsequently banned from Virginia. There's also, which is probably the most frustrating and most famously irritating one, which is the imperceptibly slanted but otherwise normal-looking patch of astroturf.
Oh, right.
I think it's explained pretty straightforward in the title.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And sometimes they'll have the one where it's like the cup is at the top of
little dome.
Yeah, like a tiny dome, and it's such a skill shot to even like get it up and not to go off the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that astroturf is tricky. It's a lot trickier than, you know, regular turf.
Yeah, golf course designers are clever, but they're not exactly known for, you know, their artistic creativity.
Right.
They seem to be more jerks than anything else.
So we've discussed mini golf, which brings up scale. Mm-hmm. Golf exists on every scale.
Yeah.
The scale that we're used to is, you know, a golf course is what I imagine maybe like a mile in distance.
Yeah, yeah. Like a full huge golf course, you know, with 18 holes. It's probably like a couple miles? Square miles, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But there's several different scales of golf. Underneath mini golf, there's actually what's called tiny golf, mm-hmm. Which is played with tiny wooden instruments on a small tabletop board.
Right. People will sometimes make them. They're similar to, like, model train sets,
mm-hmm.
except you can play on them. And you can actually get model trains to go through them.
Mm-hmm. The scale is more similar to a tiny form of billiards, though. I suppose, just called golf.
Right.
In a larger sense, there's also macro golf, which is not fully realized yet.
Macro golf is actually sort of played out in that Dinosaur Jr. music video we were talking about, where the golf course is the entire city. However, macro can get larger and larger, and some of the richest people in the world have actually started discussing getting interplanetary golf going, where, you know, hole one is Earth, hole two is Mars, hole three is Jupiter, which...
This would be a multi-billion, possibly even trillion-dollar golf game.
And when the larger the scale of the golf, the larger the danger. Because when you're talking about macro golf, you're talking about billions of dollars just to, like...
Just to launch a ball, just to get one stroke.
Yeah, just to get one stroke. And the balls, since they have to go through space, are probably going to be more expensive. And then, like, your cart is going to be a spaceship.
An actual spaceship.
Right, and so your caddy is probably... You're probably going to want a caddy that's like an astronaut.
Several caddies that are astronauts.
I don't know if they would allow more than one.
But who's to say? There's no rules.
I guess macro golf guidelines could be like you can have an entire crew of caddies.
But this is all theoretical. However, I noticed you did say something interesting. You said that that the danger ramps up tremendously the bigger the golf.
Uh-huh.
When in fact, the most dangerous form of golf is actually micro golf, which is played on an atomic... It's played on an atomic scale, and what you do is you use a tiny electron prod to jump protons and neutrons from one atom to the other. This is all fun and games until you split an atom and cause a chain reaction and a potential nuclear explosion.
Is that what they do at, like, the Hadron Collider?
Robert Oppenheimer actually invented it, and in doing so, accidentally created the atomic bomb.
Wow, I didn't know he was such a golf enthusiast. Let me ask you a question now, Taylor. Have you ever played golf?
No.
You've never played golf?
I've played mini golf.
You've played mini golf. How was it?
It was honestly kind of boring.
Boring?
Yeah.
I've played mini golf. I enjoy a good game of mini golf.
I think I was playing by myself, which is less boring and more tragic.
That's pretty tragic. Were you stood up for a date or something?
No, I just didn't have any friends.
Yikes. Going into territory. Well, I was going to say I've played golf before, and it was... regular golf, and, you know, aside from the aside from the concessions cart, which carries beer and beverage and fancy, it's pretty boring as well.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to state that many people may live near or be members at country clubs that have golf. The golf that they usually play there is a very watered-down version of golf. Sometimes called safe golf or pansy golf. Or more crudely, pussy golf is what it's referred to by the professionals who have, many of which have been quoted to say they would not be caught dead playing
pussy golf.
Which pretty much means there are rules against, like, it's a gentlemanly sport. Which I think is so ironic because golf has always been a gentlemanly sport. The idea of dueling is an idea, is something that gentlemen do.
Gentlemanly in the more classic sense, though.
Right.
Because remember, being a gentleman in 1820... encompassed things such as knowledge of dueling and fencing and fox hunting and shooting and smoking dangerous cigars and imbibing weird fluids that you don't know where they came from.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who's out there who's got like a relative or themselves who plays golf, they're playing watered down safe golf, which is fine.
It's totally okay. You know, it's no big deal.
Right.
Just don't. You know, remember to add the qualifier before you say you're going out to play a game.
That's why the clubhouse usually has so much alcohol, so that they can wash it down afterwards.
Yeah.
Do you have any relatives that play golf or any friends?
You?
Well, I have played golf. I do not play golf.
Play professionally? No. No, I don't.
Not professionally, just, you know, leisurely.
Yeah,
golf clubs and things.
There was a kid in my high school named Ben Prorock who was very, very good at golf, or safe golf, as we should say. Mm-hmm. Although he was a bit of a lily liver, if you want to put it that way. And he should stick to safe golf, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like Nerf ball.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think we kind of covered golf.
Yeah, that's about all there really is to golf.
Yeah, those are all of its qualities.
So if you're interested in golf, maybe go check it out.
Buy some clubs, buy some balls.
Be safe.
Be safe.
Get some gear. Like get some pads.
Yeah, there's no rules against wearing pads. Just shame.
Do some jogging because like
you're going to be running at some point.
Even if you're not running, if you're playing actual golf, your heart rate is going to be through the roof because mm-hmm. of the tension. So you're going to need good cardio. Mm-hmm. Tiger Woods runs something like 40 miles a week.
Yeah. Most of the time you'll see a golfer and you'll think, oh, what an unhealthy fat guy. That's actually all the padding that he's wearing underneath his clothes. He's actually very svelte.
Golfers are actually very, very lean underneath.
Mm-hmm. well, I guess that wasn't everything.
Okay, so I think that's a pretty good time to move on to listener mail.
Listener mail, one of my favorite parts.
Okay, so Taylor, I've got some listener mail here. It's coming Dave.
Great.
Dave. From Bismarck, North Dakota. Dear Tay and Kay, my name is Dave. I just checked out the Blasphemy podcast, which gave me a good chuckle.
Okay. Thank you.
As a devout Satanist, though, I couldn't let you proceed without getting you to mention the perks of blasphemy in the Church of Satan. Mm. Blasphemy against any god, or even the Dark Lord, because of his sick sense of humor, is rewarded with money as well as sex during life and a great position in hell in the afterlife. Just a few of the many perks of the Church of Satan. Ave Satani, Dave from Bismarck.
Mm.
So I feel actually kind of... thank you, Dave, for bringing
that up. Yeah, thank you.
Because that is something that... I mean, we're trying to be fair, and that was, you know, we're trying to be fair to every religion.
And we didn't include Satan.
And we completely left that out.
And we're sorry.
And that's just negligence on our part. So thank you very much for bringing that to light, and also opening our minds a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that about does it.
Uh-huh. Join us next week when we have a ribald discussion of anime.
This week's episode of Know It All with Tay and Kay was brought to you by Cookies.